Welcome. We're delighted to have you join us. We're doing a series of lessons covering many aspects of Scripture, but the focus is on worship and all that that should mean to us. And this particular lesson in this, our series of 13 is entitled The Sabbath and Worship. And before we actually begin with some text from the Old Testament, let's begin with a word of prayer. Our kind and wonderful Father, we come once again asking your guidance and protection and direction as we talk about these very important passages from Scripture. Help us to understand what the Sabbath should mean to us, how we can better worship you during those sacred hours is our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen. How central and important is the Sabbath to you in your worship of God?
For me, it's very important. For me, it's a weekly reminder. Yes, I need to be reminded. Mm-hmm. I need to be reminded every week to mm-hmm. come back to the Lord. And as the day approaches, it helps me remember the Lord. On the day, it helps me remember the Lord. After it's over, I'm still remembering the Lord. Mm-hmm. And it's just like I feel that if we didn't have the Sabbath, that regular worship with the Lord, that it would be easy to let other things take my attention. Baseball games, whatever. Yeah. All different sorts of entertainment. And slowly, little by little, I would probably end up drifting away from the Lord.
Yeah. Do you think that those rationales could be obtained by worshiping on any other day?
Well, the problem is that if we worship on different days, then we can all choose different days, and the Lord has decided a certain day where it's a memorial unto Him. He says it's a gift for us because we get to relax on that day, but it's actually His memorial day. So if we were all worshiping on different days, we would not necessarily be unified together. And I think that unity is important for God's people.
What if I asked you, well, this year it's inconvenient to celebrate the 4th of July on the 4th of July. We're going to celebrate the 4th of July on the 6th instead.
We have had multiple holidays mm-hmm. that fall on various days, but the government always celebrates them on the Monday.
Yes, and we lose something by doing that. Well, Adventists, Seventh-day Adventists, and most of us here that belong to that group, like to talk about the Sabbath when comparing ourselves with other denominations, because, of course, we are the ones who keep the Ten Commandments, all 10 of them, right? But when talking among ourselves, the discussion is quite different. There are myriads of discussions going on between parents and children, between pastors and church members, between so-called liberal Adventists and conservative Adventists about how the Sabbath should be kept. Does God allow for different ways of worshiping on the Sabbath? What do you think?
He didn't give us a list of instructions on what to do and how to do it, did he?
No, he didn't really.
And when he says don't even work on it, he didn't even define what work is.
No.
So, but he says we come together and remember that you were slaves in Egypt, remember the Creator, and if it's a law of human nature that you become like the person or thing that you worship or admire, it's an opportunity to come together and learn from the Infinite One. Mm-hmm. And the Infinite One must know how things work. He doesn't have to arbitrarily make things or make a code or rule or a regulation. It's the way things work, and He wants to reveal how those things work.
It's very, very difficult to, when you have a message like the Fourth Commandment, to say, well, I think I'll worship on this day, or that day would be as good, or I can get other blessings, without a sense, without there being a notion of some rebellion. God, my idea is going to suffice for me. Yours isn't quite good enough. And for reasons that I have down here, I think it's more important that I do it my way. Which is the
which is the
essence of rebellion.
Yeah.
It's the antithesis of other-centeredness.
Yes.
Where God is totally other-centered. We're all born self-centered, and everything that follows therefrom.
Well, let's just read the Sabbath commandment. It actually is in two different versions. The first one, the one more familiar, is found in Exodus 20, verses 8 to 11. I'm going to read from the Good News translation. Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Now, in the more traditional translation, it says, remember. You have 6 days in which to do your work, but the seventh day is a day of rest dedicated to me. On that day, no one is to work, neither you, nor your children, your slaves, your animals, nor the foreigners who live in your country. In 6 days, I, the Lord, made the earth, the sea, and the sky, the sea, and everything in them. But on the seventh day, I rested. That is why I, the Lord, blessed the Sabbath, and made it holy. Now,
that's kind of the monkey see, monkey do logic, isn't it? The leader does it this way, and everybody else follows suit.
Well, but the question is, maybe if God chose the very best way to do things, would we want to follow suit?
I would assume so.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that about 40 years later, when Moses was going back over the Ten Commandments, he gave a slightly different version. Let's look at that. It's found in Deuteronomy 5, verses 12 to 15. Observe the Sabbath and keep it holy, as I, the Lord your God, have commanded you. Very similar. You have 6 days in which to do your work, but the seventh day is a day of rest dedicated to me. Okay, we're doing okay so far. On that day, no one is to work, neither you, your children, your slaves, your animals, nor the foreigners who live in your country. Your slaves must rest just as you do. Now, who were the slaves out there and wandering through the desert? Do they still have slaves? Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that I, the Lord your God, rescued you by my great power and strength. That is why I command you to observe the Sabbath. What difference do you observe there?
Well, one's the end of the creation and one's the end of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Which one
did Moses not remember very well what God had told him?
Well, is that really the reason why we keep the Sabbath? Because it's slavery?
Well,
When you finish a work, isn't there kind of a natural rest that comes from work, finishing?
Mm-hmm.
So when you finish, you look at what you've done and you kind of look at it and evaluate the whole work. So that's kind of what happened at the end of creation. God looked at what he did and evaluated it. And so did the Israelites when they were left, when they left Egypt on the first Sabbath. They looked at what God did, and they could evaluate what he did.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the Sabbath is pointing to those two objects as something that's very important.
Well, let's talk about that in a moment. Yes, ma'am.
What happened to the children of Israel between Exodus and Deuteronomy?
They spent 40 years supposedly worshiping God and wandering around in the wilderness. They tried to enter the land of Canaan, and they had a rebellion, and they sent in the 12 spies and all that stuff. There was Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. They're a rebellion. And
I wonder what meant more to them as a people, mm-hmm. to that generation, the creation or getting out of Egypt?
Probably getting out of Egypt. It's interesting that if you go to Deuteronomy 5 and you go down to the end of the Ten Commandments, and you come down to verse 22, the version that we usually do not quote. These are, and of course the question is, the people would raise is, okay, fine, there are two versions, but which one was written on the tables of stone? Because, of course, that would be the authentic one, right? Well, it's interesting that it says here in Deuteronomy 5, starting with verse 22, these are the commandments the Lord gave to all of you when you were gathered at the mountain. When he spoke with a mighty voice from the fire and from the thick clouds, he gave these commandments and no others. Then he wrote them on two stone tablets and gave them to me. So maybe the Deuteronomy one is more authentic than the Exodus one. We ought to start quoting that.
I don't think you change the meaning with either one.
Didn't change the meaning. You're right.
How's the Exodus relate to the Sabbath? How is the Sabbath a memorial to the Exodus?
Well, it's a memorial to Exodus because God brought them out of Egypt, and he said, just as he had said about celebrating the end of the Sabbath, he said, come and worship before me on the Sabbath. Remember the day you were supposed to be in keeping all along. And it's a reminder to you that I rescued you from Egypt. We don't have any weekly. There's not a 6 days and I got you out of Egypt, and the seventh day is a day to worship. That's true.
So it's not that they walked out on Sabbath.
On day seven, no.
It's that they started worshiping again on Sabbath. It was a reintroduction of the Sabbath.
The fourth commandment. Why did he say that we did this because of getting out of Egypt?
The fourth commandment is the commandment where God gives his rationale for being authority enough to give the other nine. And to some, the creation of the world is a wonderful justification of that authority. To those slaves coming out of Egypt, getting out of Egypt was probably more significant about God's authority and his ability to pull something off than maybe even thinking about the creation.
That's what they knew.
And so in either case, we're discussing the ability of God, the authority of God to do the other nine.
And if I could add about the discussion of slavery and coming out of Egypt, from Deuteronomy and Exodus, it is there in Exodus, starting in verse 2, right before the command, right before the Ten Commandments, I am the Lord, I am Yahweh, your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And then he delves into the commandments.
So, something I want you to think about as we move through this lesson, we talk about this subject. What's your most favorite thing about the Sabbath, and what's your least favorite thing about the Sabbath? Now, we all know, those of us who have been in the Seventh-day Adventist Church for a long period of time, that many young people have rebelled and left the church because of what they perceived as a very legalistic kind of observance of the Sabbath. How do we counter that kind of rebellion? Is the Sabbath just a convenient target for rebellion that would obviously be there anyway? Is this just teenagers kicking the pricks, you know, kicking against the pricks or kicking over the hedges or whatever you want to call it? Or what's going on there?
Well, I think life is different today than it was, say, 50 or 100 years ago, going all the way back to as far back as you want to go. Think of life on a subsistence farm. Even after mechanization, you were still on the tractor. You were out in the fields. You were hot, dirty, sweaty, and the Sabbath was an opportunity to wash up, step away from those endeavors, and really enjoy a day away from work. Our lifestyle today is so much different that what we do on Sabbath might not be terribly different than what we do with our occupation.
Especially if we work with or for or connect, somehow associated with the church.
Right.
You know what you're saying, though? You're saying that the Sabbath isn't universal.
No. We're not saying that. We're just talking about reasons why people think they should keep the Sabbath.
Why is it that the people in the olden days, when they had to work hard, enjoy it more than people who nowadays.
Well, that's the question. That's one of the questions. Yeah.
That's my question. Is it not universal then? Just because we have a different lifestyle.
The fact that we might dress up and put on a shirt and tie, or maybe even a suit, to go to work every day of the week, doesn't change the fact that we need to put our suit on to go to worship in the church on Sabbath. It may seem not such a change from dungarees or overalls to suit as in our day when it's suit to suit, but we still need the break. We still need to worship God. We need to come away from our weekly activities, and we need to do the worship thing.
Think of young people growing up on that farm.
Mm-hmm.
You're out there in the field helping Dad, up early, working hard all day. And all comes along one day of the week, and you don't do that. You get to go to town. You get to meet with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
You might picnic and potluck. That could be a very welcome change in pace.
Absolutely.
Now, in today's environment, when 90% of activity seems to evolve around entertainment, one way or another, then the Sabbath might be inconvenient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, or in some cases, not be that much different than what you do. Some people end up doing on Sabbath is not that much different than what they do the rest of the week.
Especially if they view church as entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what churches have to compete with, is a remote control. Mm-hmm. For video games, whatever.
Let's look at human history as we know it. The Sabbath was first given when?
In the Garden of Eden.
In the Garden of Eden, and they were instructed to keep it. So we would say that from the Garden of Eden to the flood, presumably at least some of God's people, well, the ones who were still worshiping God, were observing the Sabbath. We don't know, we don't have a specific mention about the Sabbath after, but presumably Noah and his family were worshiping on the Sabbath and continued to do so up until the days of Abraham and down through his children. And now we come to the Exodus. And God says, I want to remind you, I know you just came out of slavery and you didn't have much control over what you did on what day of the week. But I want to remind you that we have a date. We have a time when I want to be specially with you. And that date is every Sabbath. And that was given in connection with God's great presentation to them, you know, coming down on the Mount Sinai there, and thunder and lightning and black clouds and all that sort of stuff. Hopefully it was impressive. I think they should have been reverent, awed by the whole thing.
Does that mean that God doesn't invite you any other day?
What it means is God says, that's a special day I want to spend with you. You can spend every other day with me if you like, but this is a special time when I want to. I mean, do you say to your family, well, on your birthday, do you say, well, no, this is no different than the other day. I want to do it just the same today as every other day.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, no, we think there's something special about this day. No, it's just an ordinary day.
So the whole thing is just about the specialness.
Yeah, well, it is special because, I mean, why is your birthday special?
Well, it's the exact day. But I have...
Exactly.
I have celebrated it on another day because something's come up.
That's happened at times, and we understand that. But
it didn't really bother me too much.
Cross the date line, you'll spend Sabbath on another day too.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Well, but let's follow down here. We know that the Sabbath was kept by the Jews, not always very faithfully, but it was kept down through until the times of Christ. Mm-hmm. We can turn to Isaiah 66:23 if you want to just look at that for a moment. In the last couple of verses there, actually we should start maybe with verse 22. It says, this is the last few verses of the book of Isaiah, just as the new earth and the new heavens will endure by my power, so your descendants and your name will endure. On every new moon festival and every Sabbath, people of every nation will come to worship me here in Jerusalem, says the Lord. So this tells us that God, when we get to heaven, this is, if you go back and look, you'll see that Isaiah 65 and 66 are all about heaven. So it says, okay, we had heaven, we had Sabbath being observed from creation all the way down to the coming, the first coming of Christ. We have the Sabbath being specifically mentioned that will be worshipped again, starting with the second coming of Christ and onward. What possible reason could there be for changing the Sabbath between the first coming and the second coming of Christ? What would be the advantage of that? Why would anybody want to do that?
Well, I may not, I'm sure I'm not answering your question here, because the Lord seemed to really remind us, not only the children in the wilderness, but also us, because in the NIV it starts out in Exodus chapter 20, verse 8, remember. Mm-hmm. The only commandment that says remember, mm-hmm. and it's the only commandment that most of mankind seems to want to do away with. And if you count the words, if you count the lines, it seems to be the longest, mm-hmm. the most, you know, having the most body to it. And it also brings out the only one that talks about the Creator. Mm-hmm. The process of creating.
In his authority, what it is based on.
And then when we go to the book of Revelation, mm-hmm. it's always saying, worship him who created heaven and earth, again and again and again. So it seems like he wants us to keep that day.
Yeah.
It seems pretty sure. And Jesus and his disciples kept the Sabbath.
For whose benefit? Though?
As was their custom.
Is God benefited from the standpoint, is it from his self-centeredness?
No.
For our benefit.
Of course.
He gave it to us.
Exactly.
It's our present.
Right.
It's a gift.
I agree.
From him to us. And
you, okay,
because he loves us.
Let's one other thing I want to talk, and then I'll come to you in just a second. You mentioned the experience in Luke 4, verse 16, where it says Jesus always went to the church, went to the synagogue on the Sabbath. He was a Jew. He always observed the Sabbath. He observed the Sabbath in another very unique way at the end of his life. He was crucified on a Friday afternoon. He rested in the tomb over the Sabbath and resurrected early on Sunday morning. Is that significant, the fact that he rested on the Sabbath in the tomb? Or does it just add more meaning? In other words, a celebration, a commemoration is, okay, this is our time to stop, back up, and say, we remember that God created us. Two, we remember that God set us free from slavery. That is, from the slavery of sin in our case. Three, God rested on the Sabbath in the tomb. Why did Jesus have to die? What was the whole purpose of his life and death here? Connected, again, with the observance of the Sabbath. Then we look down and we say, okay, when Christ comes again, we will observe the Sabbath again, starting from the second coming and on. So God is saying, bang, 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 bang. Let me add up all kinds of things that you should remember that are connected with the Sabbath. Sorry. Gary, go ahead.
Okay, I was just thinking about the Sabbath being true even in heaven, that it's going to go on. Now, what if I was an astronaut and I got in a mission going to Mars and landed on Mars and I was going to be there working there for a year? How would I keep the Sabbath?
We have no evidence that the Sabbath was given to anybody but Earth.
Yeah.
Okay. So the way you made it sound like the whole universe was going to keep the Sabbath.
Ah, they will, because the center of the universe is going to be Earth when the New Jerusalem comes down here, and everybody will come to the center of God's universe. That will be Earth, and it will be Sabbath.
So everybody from all over the universe is going to come down to the Earth to have Sabbath.
Well, so observe it. Now, remember that time and space aren't the issue for them as it is for us. Apparently, God can communicate instantaneously with his entire universe. So I would say God may be celebrating on planet Earth the seventh-day cycle, which obviously has to do with our sun and so forth, that seventh-day cycle. But what he'll be celebrating is what he did here on planet Earth to create us, to save us, and so forth. And the rest of the universe, looking on from wherever they are in the universe, would say, Amen.
And the victory was won here on earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The victory when Satan was thrown down, Christ came, Christ got the victory here. His people, the saints, the followers of God, are the ones getting the victory. We, those who are saved, will be raised up a little higher than the angels. And as Ken pointed out, heaven will be here. His throne will be here. His dwelling place will be here. So this is the place.
And we're also told some very interesting verses in Revelation chapter 14. This is that the Seventh-day Adventist Church has sort of claimed as our own. Then I saw another angel flying high in the air with an eternal message of good news. Notice those eternal message of good news to announce to the peoples of the earth, to every race, tribe, language, and nation. How many does that leave out?
Zip.
None. He said in a loud voice, honor God and praise his greatness, for the time has come for him to judge. Worship him who, okay, and why are we to worship him?
He made
heaven, earth, sea, and the springs of water. And you say, okay, how am I supposed to worship him? I look back into the scriptures, and what do I find? The way to worship him, to honor him as a creator, is to observe the Sabbath. And this is a description of the remnant people who will be preparing for his second coming, presumably in our day. So this would say to me, okay, that means that if we are really preparing for the coming of Jesus Christ and preparing to worship God as he chooses to worship, in our day, too, we should be worshiping on the seventh-day Sabbath.
I would like to go back to the Sabbath as being a memorial of creation. The time that we live in now, evolution is widely accepted, widely expounded on, and creation is denied almost everywhere. And the Sabbath is a reminder of that creation, mm-hmm. which comes around every 7 days. And if we look at our calendar, we have a celestial event for the year. We have a celestial event for the month.
More or less.
Well, 28 months. We've modified
kind of messed
it,
but, things up a little bit,
but
yeah.
There is. But there's nothing you can point to as a clock for the week.
Yeah.
It is simply created, one might say almost arbitrarily, a perfect number that God chose. And man has tried to change that. The French in the 1790s adopted a 10-day week as a revolt against the church and Sabbath. It didn't stick. Our week still is a memorial to the Sabbath, whether we keep the Sabbath or not. You just look at the calendar.
Mm-hmm.
It rolls around every 7 days. And there's nothing but the story of creation to account for those 7 days.
If there is a person who says in their heart, I want to be just like God. I am so enthralled with what he did. He has proven to me beyond the shadow of a doubt that he knows best. I want to line up with that. How could they argue about the Sabbath?
If you like to learn, and the infinite one is what he is, wouldn't you want to learn more about the infinite? I know the world, the process
yes.
of learning could go on for eternity when
yes.
you're dealing with the infinite.
But if in that process you learn that he was interested in the Sabbath, that would be just part of the whole economy that you're trying to develop.
Exactly. Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand why someone would worship
why
on
would, what, why would,
Tuesday.
What
we'll worship on every day, but why keep your Sabbath on Tuesday?
Well, if
God wanted it on Friday night and Saturday.
If worship means worth ship,
mm-hmm.
if God has worth, why wouldn't we want to spend some time learning about this being that has some worth?
Yeah.
It's what makes life worth living outside of just the drudgery of the week going on. In fact, the Jews, they look forward to the first day toward the Sabbath, the second day before mm-hmm. the Sabbath. So
It's interesting that in that verse we read from Revelation 14, it's called an everlasting gospel. Now, there are many Christians today who would say that the gospel is about how God saves you and me. Is that message everlasting?
Well,
no. It would have been, people would have, what in the world you were talking about if you'd gone back before the Garden of Eden and said, the Sabbath is here to remind us that God saves human beings. What? What are you talking about? The gospel? What do you mean? We don't know about human beings. We don't know about saving them. Okay? So we have to have something here that reflects something more than just salvation for human beings. And I would say that the truth about God is everlasting. And that is the good news, not just how God saves human beings. It's a part of it. But it's much bigger than just how God saves you and me.
Are you asking what is the good news?
I think I just said what the good news was.
Well, I would phrase it slightly differently.
Okay.
That the good news is that God won the controversy between himself and Satan.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. It's his character that was demonstrated that won that argument. But the good news is that God won the great controversy.
Mm-hmm.
That Satan is defeated, and that the universe will be safe from the repetition of sin.
Mm-hmm.
For all eternity because of this event.
Yeah.
And then God can spend the rest of eternity teaching those that are safe to live next door to, or safe to be given other powers, so to speak. Remember, he says if you're really in harmony with God, you could even heal the sick or raise the dead. Well, you're not going to be needed to do that, but he says your faith could move mountains. Man, but God must have a lot more going on there with if you get the sight of the Hubble telescope. He must have something he has in store.
What if he decided to go on creating?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and in light of our passage in Isaiah 66, 22, 23 in there, we recognize that, and maybe I should read the other passages, Malachi 4, verse 3, just almost the last verse of the Old Testament, in Protestant Bibles anyway. On the day when I act, you will overcome the wicked, and they will be like dust under your feet. Now, why do I mention that? I mention that because apparently, when it's all done, there are only two choices. We can choose to observe the Sabbath and all that that implies with God and the rest of the universe for eternity, or we can go back to ashes. Which do we want to choose?
Well, you kind of put it in a threat that way, didn't you?
Threat? I'm just telling you what's going to happen.
No, well, it makes no difference. It's still a threat.
Reality is reality. If reality hurts you, that's a threat.
And
absolutely.
It's got to be the seventh day.
Is that mm-hmm. any different than what was said in the Garden of Eden in Genesis 3?
No.
For what?
Genesis 2. 17, I think you're talking about, right?
Specifically?
Well, if you disobey, you will die.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
is that a threat or a promise?
If you refuse to follow instructions, you will die.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the instructions are for your benefit.
Yeah, I don't know what your meaning of disobey means.
Well,
any dictator could claim that.
My lawyer friend used to be a train engineer, and you'd be surprised. They have to do everything just right. Miles and miles and miles ahead of certain places, they have to start to slow the train down. If they miss it by a few seconds, the whole train will derail. So it's not like, is it a threat or what? I don't know, but if you don't do it right, the train will derail. There are certain curves, and even they may not look like big curves to us, but the train has to be at a certain speed when you're doing those curves.
Hmm. Yeah, but you're talking about something that's not random. You're talking about something that's...
That's the way things work.
You bet your life he's not talking about something random, well, and neither are the Ten Commandments.
Okay, but seventh day, we still seems random to me.
Well,
is your birthday random?
If you were to keep the Sabbath...
Why?
It's not random. 6 days creation, and then rest it. What do you mean random, Gary?
Well, okay, if the Sabbath... What did they have for the Sabbath before creation?
Well, there wasn't this earth
on this earth. Nothing.
There was no... Okay, the other nine commandments have been here forever, but the seventh day...
No.
...has not.
No. There was no... You had no mom or dad.
Okay.
No, but the...
There was no point of the fifth commandment. There's no point of the sixth commandment. There's no point of the seventh commandment. 8, 9, none of those have any... they're relative to human beings.
No, they're not.
How would you commit adultery with an angel?
Well, how do you lie with an angel? You can.
Well, maybe...
When you commit adultery, it doesn't mean you have to do a sexual thing. It could be going against somebody.
That's true. That's true. And it seems that one third of the angels committed adultery.
All nine of them can be translated to the angels. Except for the Sabbath.
Well, it's unique to creatures. The creature needs to learn from the Creator, apparently. And God has some order to it. And once every 7 days, he says, we're going to get together. Once every 7 days, the other 6 days, you do your own thing.
Well, let's look at it this way. How would you describe the relationship between true Christian worship and Sabbath observance? The Sabbath observance happened only from, as we would use the biblical expression and timing, from sundown on Friday until sundown on Sabbath. And that's, okay, just those exact 24 hours, that's the Sabbath and nothing else? Or does Sabbath observance involve some other things going on other days of the week? And my question, particularly in that reference, is if we made better preparations for the Sabbath, would our children enjoy it more? Would they be more likely to say the Sabbath is a special treat, a time when mom and dad spend time with them and do things with them and so forth?
At Disneyland?
Well, I think that we probably have to make some choices about where the best place to worship God is. I don't think Disneyland is the right place to worship God. Try to imagine yourself in the Garden of Eden on that very first Sabbath. Were Adam and Eve able to see the rest of the beings of the universe observing the Sabbath or watching them? I mean, you can imagine. I mean, talk about privacy. We're really big into privacy these days, and health departments and government agencies are, you know, very strict about privacy. How much privacy did Adam and Eve have? The whole universe was watching everything they did.
Yep.
Well, has that changed? I don't think that's changed one iota.
Probably not much.
Not much, not at all.
So?
Well, there's more of us to watch. There's more of us to watch than there used to be. In those days, these were two brand new, completely unique creatures. Nothing else in the universe like it. And everybody was saying, what do they do? How do they relate to each other? You know, what's going on?
Okay, I didn't quite understand your question. I thought the... Two were watching the angels.
No, I was asking, well, that would be part of the question. Were they able to see the angels? But certainly all the angels saw them. What do you think God said to them about celebrating the Sabbath? To Adam and Eve on that first Sabbath. What would God say to them? And who was visibly present in the garden?
Well, I think it would be easy to say that he said, I finished this work.
Mm-hmm. Did God lead out in the service?
Well,
what do you think they did on the first Sabbath? I'm asking you to think.
No,
you're asking me to guess.
You're asking me to guess?
Okay. I'm asking you to guess then.
Well, maybe they sat down at the foot of the Tree of Life and talked about what's going on in the universe.
Yeah. Do you think the rest of the angels said anything to Adam and Eve about what had gone on the week before that?
they
let's
might
leave God out of it for just a second.
But they're not mentioned as being
the teachers,
players.
Okay, let's be honest. The book of Genesis, no matter whose reckoning you take, the book of Genesis covers at least half of human history. Now, you're asking me, are all the details spelled out in the book of Genesis? And the answer is no. So let's just say that right up front.
Well, you're also asking something that I haven't experienced. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
Have you ever had a Sabbath school with an angel from heaven teaching the class? I never had.
No.
So how in the world could I even, how could I even answer the question?
Well, as our time is moving along, there's a fantastic section in the book of Isaiah, chapters 40 to 55, and we won't have time to go and study it. I wish we did. That I like to say is Isaiah's version of, will the real God please stand up? And you could read Isaiah 40. Let's just pick a couple of spots real quick. Look at Isaiah 40, verses 25 and 26. To whom can the holy God be compared? Is there anyone else like him? Look up at the sky. Who created the stars you see? The one who leads them out like an army. He knows how many there are and calls each one by name. His power is so great, not one of them is ever missing. Okay, that's the start. Let's look at Isaiah 44. Let's look at 45. I am the one, Isaiah 45, 12 and 13. I am the one who made the earth and created the human race to live there. By my power I stretched out the heavens. I control the sun, the moon, and the stars. I myself have stirred Cyrus to action to fulfill my purpose and put things right. I will straighten every road that he travels. He will rebuild my city, Jerusalem, and set my captive people free. No one has hired him or bribed him to do this. The Lord Almighty has spoken. And we could go on. There are many other passages in Scripture that talk about, I suppose that's probably as much as we have time to read right now. The true God is described in this section as having three fantastic characteristics. One, he's able to create out of nothing. Two, he's able to predict the future far in advance, and he challenges any other gods to do so. And three, he's able to perform miracles in the here and now. Of course, Satan can do a certain amount of that as well, but God can do much more. So these are the three characteristics that really identify a true God. The idol gods of the nations around Israel not only could not do any of those things, they had to be nailed down so they wouldn't fall over. You know? They were made by human hands and propped up. As Isaiah concludes in several locations, there is no other God except Yahweh. Now, having said that, how would you think he might want us to worship him? How would we want to worship him? I mean, if God said to you, okay, choose how you would like to worship me, what would you do?
Well, if I was Cain, I'd say, I think I'll bring some of my fruit.
Okay.
That didn't work out too good.
Well, and what was his attitude during that time? Did Cain know that that's not what God asked for?
He was just doing what he wanted to do.
Well, that's not what I asked you. I asked you, how would you worship God? Now, we know about the consequences of all kinds of people who've chosen not to worship God. And if we had time, we would discuss that. What I'm asking is, how would you worship God? If God said, okay, I want you to worship me, choose how you want to do it.
If God described to Adam and Eve this controversy, this war in heaven, this mm-hmm. this argument over the character and government of God, if you buy into the idea that God is in a political campaign to win our hearts, our minds, our allegiance, I think God would want us learning about him. That he would want us studying his revelation. Mm-hmm. That is to me the most profitable activity one could do in terms of worship.
I'd add one more to that. I think I agree with you 100%. But I think to recognize that he is active in our lives, that he is providing for us, and what he has done, the more that I give him thanks, and the more I recognize the more things that he has done and the more things I give thanks, I think that is a part. On that Sabbath day, I think we ought to spend some time in thanksgiving and praising his name, some time in learning from him, and get the relationship closer.
Well, the more we learn, the more we realize we have so much more to be thankful for.
Absolutely.
That, of course, is.
Now, we don't have time to discuss this in detail, but the major challenge to the worship of God in modern times is the theory of evolution. I mean, the purpose of the theory of evolution is to get rid of the idea of God. We don't want him in our existence. We don't want him to judge us. We don't want to have anything to do with him. We want to just live our lives however we want to, and want him to leave us alone. And that's the basis behind the thinking of evolution. And of course, this leads to all the notions about creatures evolving and how they evolved and where we came from, and slime and one-celled creatures and so forth, down through the, and some people believe this so much, it's a kind of worship. So much so that the National Geographic had a huge article, almost the entire magazine recently, a while back, devoted to this new creature that was discovered in China that was half bird and half animal, apparently, and they all made a great big deal. And then they discovered it was a hoax.
If a Bible believer or a believer in the Creator God would exercise as much faith as an evolutionist exercises in their belief system, it would be a whole lot further progressed.
Yeah. And the National Geographic, on a small little back page, more or less, said, "We're sorry. It turns out that our great announcement was a hoax." No major announcement whatsoever. The Sabbath was intended as a period of rest. Rest is essential for human organisms, especially, as Dennis mentioned, if you're working really hard in the field as a subsistence farmer for 6 days a week, you ought to look forward to the Sabbath with great delight, I would think, just because it provides a change and a rest. We know the human body needs rest. We need changes take place in our bodies if we stress them for too long a period of time without taking a break. Do we also need a spiritual rest?
Spiritual rest? Mm-hmm. Can you define that?
Well,
we're into this rest. So if that's spiritual, we need one.
We need a physical rest. We need a mental rest. I mean, I don't think anybody who lays down a pillow at night would deny that.
Exodus 31:17, mm-hmm. We talk about the Sabbath. It is a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So God was refreshed on his Sabbath day.
The word there is not, boy, God was just super tired. And he needed to go down and put his head on the pillow. No, the word is he stopped what he was doing. He took a break.
But the refreshment, he could look back, he's accomplished something, and it was good.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Jesus say something about the Father? Always worked?
Quite a lot.
I mean, worked all the time, mm-hmm. even on Sabbath.
Some things he does all the time. If he didn't keep us alive, we wouldn't be alive.
Well, that happened even in the first Sabbath, too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it's okay to do good on the Sabbath, then?
I hope so.
Keeping us alive and breathing.
Raising the dead like Jesus did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Romans 6 talks about slavery. We've suggested that the Sabbath is a memorial of taking people out of slavery. Let me just read a few verses here and see what you think. Surely you know, I'm starting with Romans 6, verse 16. Surely you know that when you surrender yourselves as slaves to obey someone, you are in fact the slaves of the master you obey, either of sin, which results in death, or of obedience, which results in being put right with God. But thanks be to God, for though at one time you were slaves to sin, you have obeyed with all your heart the truths found in the teaching you received. You were set free from sin and became the slaves of righteousness. I use everyday language, Paul says, because of the weakness of your natural selves, and they certainly knew very well what a slave was. At one time you surrendered yourselves entirely as slaves to impurity and wickedness for wicked purposes. In the same way, you must now surrender yourselves entirely as slaves of righteousness for holy purposes. And so I asked you, remember we said that the Sabbath was a memorial of God rescuing the children of Israel from slavery. Would the Sabbath be a memorial of God's rescuing us from slavery to sin? Would that be included?
Absolutely.
I think so. I think it's one of the major mechanisms by which God does rescue us. But then I'm worried by that last expression. Are we just changed from one kind of slave to another kind of slave? What does it mean to be a slave of righteousness? And Paul, you know, repeatedly refers to himself as a slave of Jesus Christ. And he boasts about it.
Well, it just simply means that it's important to him that he does the work for it. He is a slave to it. I mean, why would anybody do any work for anybody, unless they...
Yeah. Well, societies around the world have regarded time in very different ways. Some societies, little attention is paid to time and schedules don't mean very much. In other societies, they believe that time is cyclical. Such groups believe that events have happened sometime in the past will eventually be repeated and then repeated again, just as the early seasons in the lunar cycle recur. But Christians in general, and particularly Bible-believing Christians, understand that time is linear, that time is moving from what is past, from events that we've talked about, to a definite climax in the future. If we believe that time is linear, then we need to look back at a time when the Sabbath began. There were no Jews present in the Garden of Eden. The Sabbath antedated the foundation of the Jewish nation by thousands of years. No wonder God said when he established the Jewish nation, remember. Look at Exodus 31, verse 13. Keep the Sabbath, the Good News Bible says, keep the Sabbath my day of rest because it is a sign. What's the purpose of a sign?
It's kind of like a mark.
Mm-hmm. A mark of what?
A mark of...
It could be a mark of ownership. This is so-and-so's place. It could be a street sign, something like that, says, okay, this is where you go if you want to be on the... It's a sign of identity, something like that. The Sabbath is a sign between you and me.
Yeah? Sorry to interrupt you. It's kind of like some groups, maybe like agents in a time of war or something, have a little sign, little thing that they do, then they know each other.
Mm-hmm.
So this, could that be like that? The Sabbath is a sign between God and his people?
Yeah. A sign between you and me, God speaking, for all time to come. How long? All time to come. To show that I, the Lord, have made you my own people. And if you look at Exodus 19, verse 6, won't take time to do that right now. God says, you are my people. You're supposed to be holy priests. You're supposed to be my representative to reaching out to all nations. But it's interesting we go over to 1 Peter 2:9, so I'm going to take you over there right now. 1 Peter 2:9. Notice what he says. But you are the chosen race, and who's Peter talking to?
The Jews.
He's talking. Mm-hmm. Who's Peter talking to? He's talking to the Christian church, isn't
mm-hmm.
he? But you are the chosen race, the king's priest, the holy nation, God's own people, chosen to proclaim the wonderful acts of God and who called you out of darkness into his own marvelous light. Would proclaiming God's wonderful actions include what he did about with the Sabbath?
Have a hard time to cut it out.
Really hard to cut it out if you look at all of scriptures. So it seems like Peter's suggesting that God has transferred his particular attention from the Jewish people to all Christians. Now, Now, that, of course, includes Jews who become Christians, but to all other people as well.
Ken, I know our time is just a few seconds left, but I don't know if you were going to get to this or not, but some people say, well, that doesn't matter. That was old stuff, and we're new Christians, and we're free. Apparently not free to murder, not free to steal, not free to worship other gods. Yeah, but I see here in the book of Hebrews, which is the New Testament, it says in chapter 4, verse 9, there remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from his own work, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest, so that no one will fall by following their example of disobedience. Two points I'd like to make is that I read this starting in Hebrews chapter 3 all the way through, and then all the way through chapter 4 till it makes that point. And the second point that I'd like to make is I've been to many different denominations, churches, and things like that. Every pastor I've ever known preaches Hebrews chapter 4, but they don't preach that. They preach what comes immediately after the next sentence, for the word of God is living and active, sharper than any double-edged sword. It penetrates even to dividing soul and spirit, joints and marrow. It judges the thoughts and attitudes of the heart. They always preach on that, but one sentence back it says there therefore remains a Sabbath day's rest. And in fact, it's two whole chapters.
Yeah.
New Testament.
Well, I believe that God will ask us to continue worshiping on the Sabbath for the rest of eternity because of what it represents. I think we'll come together and we'll say, God, let me tell you about what I did this last week. I discovered so many exciting, interesting things. I traveled here and there. This is what I did. And I can just see God saying, that's wonderful. Let me make a suggestion. Next week, why don't you try this and that? You'll find some more very interesting things. And off we'll go, you know. But every week we'll come together and we will celebrate what God has made, what He's done, His care for us, and the marvelous universe that He has created. And I think that's why we need the Sabbath, and we will continue to need the Sabbath for the rest of eternity. And I, for one, will have no problem whatsoever participating in that kind of a celebration. There's no drudgery. There's no, we have to go and do that again. Not at all. This will be a time of great celebration. You should be there, too. See you next week.